Welcome to the America Magazine podcast. America Magazine is the national Catholic weekly. Visit us online at www.americamagazine.org.
Hello and welcome to the America Magazine podcast for the week of February 2nd. We're joined this week by Deacon Greg Kandra, who has an article in this week's issue tentatively titled, Give Us This Day Our Daily Blog. Welcome, Deacon Greg.
No, thank you.
Now, maybe you can just begin by introducing yourself to our audience.
I'm a relatively newly ordained deacon for the Diocese of Brooklyn. I was ordained in May of 2007. I serve at Our Lady Queen of Martyrs in Forest Hills, Queens. And I just recently completed working for 26 years at CBS News as a writer and producer, and am now the news director for NET, N-E-T, New Evangelization Television, which is the cable channel for the Diocese of Brooklyn.
One of the reasons we had you in here today was to talk about your article, which addresses a blog that you've written called The Deacon's Bench. Maybe you can introduce that.
The Deacon's Bench is my little contribution to the blogosphere. And I really started it shortly after I was ordained. I took a couple of weeks off of work after ordination for what I refer to as my deacon moon. It gave me a lot of opportunity to serve Mass and to preach and to help out around the parish, help out with funerals, do a wide range of things that I hadn't had much experience doing and make a lot of mistakes and sort of learn by doing. And I had some free time on my hands and decided sort of as a lark to create a blog about being a deacon. And Blogger has a very simple system where in a matter of moments, anybody can create a blog, and that's pretty much what I did. And I started out basically just as having a place to dump my homilies and to talk about deacons and what deacons are doing. And it's gradually expanded beyond that to a wide range of things involving the church and things that interest me and that pique my curiosity.
Now, when you first started, who did you think you were writing for? Your fellow deacons or just whoever was interested?
Basically me. I couldn't imagine why anyone in their right mind would really be interested in what I had to say or what I was doing. And it was basically me and a few crazy friends who were also bloggers and deacons. I really didn't think it would have that much interest for anybody else. But gradually, other people began picking it up and linking to it and linking to articles that I had found and linking to things that I had done. And bit by bit, the audience began to grow. And I now get about 50,000 hits a month, which is pretty astonishing. Sometimes even more than that, depending on who else links to it and who else discovers it.
Now, who is your audience now, as best as you can tell from your comments, et cetera?
It's an interesting range of people, and it's people from all over the world. A lot of deacons, deacon candidates, deacon aspirants discover it and find out information about deacons. As much as I can, that is sort of my core audience and my priority is to put news out there about deacons, about formation, about ordinations. And it sort of gives the diaconate attention that it doesn't normally get, which I think people really appreciate. So I get a lot of deacons who read. Priests, religious from around the world. I got an email the other day from a Benedictine monk in Rome. I got an email from a 19-year-old teenager struggling with his faith in the Azores who had some questions about the Catholic Church and what he's struggling with. It's a wide range, and it's one of the things that I think people appreciate about it is that I don't come to the blog with a particular agenda. It's not driven by politics or by any particular point of view. I'm not trying to bash one group or another. I'm really creating a platform and a forum for a wide range of people to express their views and to find out what's happening in the church and in the world. And people seem to really appreciate that.
What perspective do you offer as a deacon that is different from, say, a layperson or a priest who has a blog?
Well, a deacon really, as I've mentioned before, and I wrote about this a couple of years ago in America, the deacon really straddles two worlds. He has one foot in the sanctuary and the other on the sidewalk. And I bring my experience as a husband, as a person who has a job and lives in the world and has to pay a mortgage and struggle with all those things, but also the perspective of someone who devotes his life to a lot of prayer and a lot of working in the church and working on spiritual and liturgical things. It's really an extension in many ways of what the diaconal ministry is supposed to be. So it looks at life from a somewhat different perspective. And when I first started this blog, I looked to see if there were other deacons out there blogging, and there are a few, but not very many. And so I, you know, sort of, you know, put my foot in the water, and here I am.
Now, you mentioned earlier that you have some dialogue with your readers. This is in the comments section. Mm-hmm. Is it mostly civil, the conversations that go on? Sometimes, as you know, the web can get a little vitriolic, but on your website, what is it like?
Well, it's been an interesting evolution, because when I first started, I did not moderate the comments, and so people could leave comments anonymously, and a lot of them were not very nice, and ended up causing me a lot of problems. So I started moderating the comments, and I laid out some very strict ground rules, the fundamental one being WWJB, what would Jesus blog? And I asked people to be civil and be respectful and appreciate the fact that you can disagree with someone and, you know, still be civil and respectful. And that's helped tremendously. I weed out the ones that are really nasty or hostile or slanderous. And what I've discovered is that when people know that their comments are being monitored and being judged and being evaluated, they're more careful about what they say. I also set it up so that people have to register in order to leave comments, and they can't do it anonymously anymore. And I think that's elevated the tone of things and has kept things much more respectful and much more Christian in many ways.
Yeah, it's an issue we also deal with. We do moderate our comments. And it does rob the blog of some spontaneity, because there isn't the immediate back and forth, because you have to wait until myself or somebody else here takes a look at the comments, and overnights and weekends, and it might be slower than during the course of a normal business day. But yeah, you have to weigh the need to be Christian and civil with also, you know, you want a good conversation.
Yeah, and I try not to interfere with the process. Unless someone is specifically critical of something that I've written or posted or has something directly challenging me, I let people pretty much engage one another in the comments and sort of step back from it, which I think is in harmony with the general tone that I try to have for the blog, which is as a forum for people to get together and discuss things and try not to insert my own opinion and my own ideas about things as much. Other bloggers are much more opinionated and much more vocal about their political views and how they feel about things, and I try to just step back and let the story speak for itself and let people make up their own minds about what they feel about things.
Do you have an opinion as why web commentary can get so vitriolic, especially on Catholic sites where you would expect it to be perhaps more civil, yet in some instances it's quite uncivil?
I think religion, like politics, it cuts to the core of people, and it cuts to the essence of what they believe and what they stand for, and they're very protective of their faith and very defensive of it, and I don't blame them for that. We all have strong opinions about what we believe and what we pray and what we live, and it's understandable that people would be particularly defensive. It sometimes can cross the line, and people can become offensive, and that's where you have to watch and be careful that people aren't unnecessarily attacking one another and getting into fights. As your colleague Jim Martin says, see how these Christians shove one another. And it can get nasty sometimes.
Now, what changes have you noticed in the Catholic blogging world since you started? I'm thinking in particular, this is happening all over the blogging world, where it started off as largely kind of a homegrown enterprise. In the Catholic world, you had people like Rocco Pomo, Amy Wellborn, who are still running very popular websites yourself, but you're also having America and Commonweal and more kind of the old guard media getting involved. Has that changed the Catholic blogosphere at all?
Well, in my own experience, it gives me more things to link to, which is great. I mean, it helps me to put those blogs out to people who might not otherwise encounter them. I think that the corporate kinds of blogs that you're talking about that are connected with publications or magazines have a different tone, a different character. They're usually offshoots of things that are published elsewhere, and they're usually taken from a slightly different perspective. They're very often less personal, and they tend to take a different approach for a variety of reasons. They tend to be more of a reflection of the publications that they're affiliated with, which is great because, you know, the more voices out there, the better. But I still think that there's a really strong appetite and interest in blogs like mine, like Amy's, like Rocco's, that are completely independent and that are really just a one-man band and are a reflection really of one person's sensibility. And that there's just something, a character and a quality about that that is unique.
Yeah, I think there's something to be said. We run a group blog, so does Common Wheel, and one of the reasons we do that is because you get a variety of voices, but it also kind of, you know, people share the load, so it's not one person who has to do all the blogging. Mm-hmm. But I think you're right that when you have an individual, you know, and other publications are doing this as well, Andrew Sullivan, the New York Times, most of their bloggers are individual bloggers, you get a distinct voice, and I think that helps to build the audience over time. Now, maybe we can switch to talking about your recent career move. You talked about your time at CBS News, and you're now working for a TV channel affiliated with the Brooklyn Diocese. Maybe you can tell us more about that.
Where I am now, it's now called NET, New Evangelization Television. For 40 years, it was known as the Prayer Channel, and it was primarily an educational tool affiliated with the Diocese of Brooklyn. And it had a lot of the kinds of programmings that you find on Catholic cable channels. There's a handful of them around the country, probably the most prominent and most established and respected being Catholic TV up in Boston. What we decided to do, or what the diocese decided to do back in December, was to relaunch with a different name and a different focus and a different mandate. And our mandate really now is new evangelization. It is to try and, rather than preach to the choir, which we were doing for such a long time, try and maybe reach people who aren't necessarily Catholic, aren't necessarily Christian, maybe those who are unchurched, maybe those who have drifted away from the church, and express for them something that is interesting about the faith, interesting about the church, that might lure them back and increase their interest and their curiosity in the faith. So we're doing a wider range of programming. We're doing series that are targeted to a younger demographic, a younger audience, and that aren't quite as dogmatic and doctrinaire and are really telling stories about the church, but in an interesting and lively and engaging way. And the centerpiece of that is, we hope, going to be a first, which is a daily news show, 30 minutes every day, a news magazine show, which is going to be all about religion and faith and Catholic news and things that are happening in the Catholic stratosphere around the world. We're hoping to launch that in April. We're going to have two anchors. It doesn't have a title yet. It's still very much in development and still in the brainstorming phase. But we hope to be able to bring stories of the church and stories of the faith to the world in an interesting and engaging manner and in a way that maybe people haven't seen before.
Now, this channel is, I assume, carried by the local cable affiliates in Brooklyn and Queens?
That's right. It's Channel 97 on Time Warner in Brooklyn, Queens, Manhattan, and Staten Island. It's not in the Bronx yet. And I think it's Cablevision Channel 30 carries it in those same places. It is also available on the Internet. There's live streaming on, I think it's netny.net is the web address.
Okay, so our listeners who are not in the New York area can access it that way.
That's right, yeah.
Now, I just noticed on your blog you have an ad for stopgoodtv.com. Now, I was interested in what that was about.
Well, when the decision was made to relaunch, we had to have an interesting marketing campaign. So there's a gentleman I wrote down the name because I always get it wrong. Michael Migliosi with Cesario Migliosi Ad Agency in Los Angeles. And Michael is friends with our marketing director, Gary Arkin, and he's from Brooklyn. He's a devout Catholic, and I found out later he was a reader of my blog before he ever became affiliated with this. They approached this ad agency and said, what can we do that will set us apart and that will make a bit of a splash? They wanted something that would attract attention and generate buzz and that would cut through the Christmas clutter, since we were doing this in December when everyone was going to be advertising something. And the ad agency came up with this idea of, it's sort of anti-good TV advertising. It's really thinking outside the box. Basically, they came up with an ad that uses a devil figure, a little guy, an actor in a cheesy devil costume, who is addressing his minions and saying, there's this new TV station that's just starting. Stop, it's good TV. We want to stop it. So go to stopgoodtv.com and stop this from happening. When you go to stopgoodtv.com, what you find is a website where you can talk to the devil and ask him questions. And you also find links to netny.net, our website. The reaction that this created was phenomenal. It was picked up by Drudge and also picked up by CNN. Jeannie Moose did a story about us and about the channel and interviewed the ad agency. And that story ran infinitesimally over a period of several days around the time of the launch. And I said to one of the people, you know, more people now know about our channel around the world after 1 hour because of Drudge and CNN that knew about it over 40 years that we were existing in Brooklyn. So it's been phenomenal and generated incredible attention.
I understand you're kind of in the early stages of launching this new channel, but so far, what have you noticed as the differences between the way that, you know, you worked at CBS News for a long time, how they covered issues, say, related to the church versus how, you know, a station affiliated with a church organization covers those same issues?
Well, the interesting thing, one of the myths that I've tried to debunk over the years is the myth that the mainstream media, the MSM, is anti-church and anti-religion and hates Catholics. And from my experience of 26 years at CBS, that's really not the case at all. The CBS newsroom is full of faithful people, a lot of Catholics, a lot of Christians, a lot of devout Jews who are believers and who believe in what they're doing and believe in God and go regularly to church and to temple and take religion very seriously. There is a lot of misunderstanding, I think, about the Catholic Church in particular. And that shouldn't be surprising because you find that in Catholics. So people who go to church every week don't really understand the church very well either. So they jump to a lot of conclusions, and there's a lot of nuances in church teaching and in church instruction that people just don't understand. For example, last year, there was a wire story that came out of Rome that the church was revising the seven deadly sins. Well, this became a big deal, and they wanted to do an item about it on the CBS Evening News. And I looked at the wire story, and I said, that's not right. They're completely misreading this. And I ended up making a phone call to Father Thomas Williams, who is the CBS consultant in the Vatican. And I said, correct me if I'm wrong, but this is, you know, completely misreading what was said. It was some lower-level Vatican official who had made some remarks to the media and was talking about ways of reinterpreting the seven deadly sins. And in his reinterpretation, there were not seven, there were like 15. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't a definitive Vatican pronouncement. It wasn't any, you know, infallible statement. It was really just one man's opinion. So there was no there. And you had to do a little ferreting it out to find that out and to make that clear. And we ended up not doing the story. So people are easily misled, I think, by some things that come out of the Vatican and that some of the things that go on in the church, and they don't completely understand the way the church works and how the teaching authority of the church works. On the other hand, working for a place like the Diocese of Brooklyn, Net, you operate from the assumption that basically what the church has to say is true. Basically what it has to say is good and valuable, and more people need to know what the church is saying. And you operate rather than from a place of skepticism, which I think most people correctly in the mainstream media operate from. You operate from a place of sympathy. And part of our job is, in a sense, to be apologists for the faith, but also to ask some hard questions and to try and clarify what the church is doing and to try and bring that to the widest possible audience. So the priorities are a little bit different.
Well, we will end with that, but we want to thank Greg Kandra, Deacon Greg Kandra, for joining us, and we'll give you one last chance to give us both the websites for your blog and also for NET.
Yes, the blog, The Deacon's Bench. If you just Google The Deacon's Bench, usually that will pop up near the top, and it's www.deacbench.blogspot.com, and NET is www.netny.net.
Okay, great. Well, thanks again for joining us, and perhaps you can come in again in a few months and update us on your venture.
Yeah, I'd love to. Thank you.
Thank you again for joining us for this week's edition of the American Magazine podcast. Tune in next week when we'll have two editors discussing the television show Lost, which begins its 5th season on ABC this month. I want to remind you that you can respond to our conversations by going to americamagazine.podbean.com. This is Tim Reedy for America Magazine.